UN backing for a second resolution. It's also saying that if it doesn't get the second resolution, it's going to ignore the UN. Is this a credible position to hold?
You're asking me, is the president's position credible? And I would say yes, not surprisingly. It seems to me that what he said when he went into the United Nations was that he thought it was important that the world engage this issue, because it's a big issue, an important issue, and it's an issue that we're going to be faced with in this century. He also said that, needless to say, member states reserve the right of self-defense. And therefore, he wanted to bring it into the United Nations and have them address it, but that by doing so, he did not want anyone to believe that he would, as a country, make a conscious decision that he would forego the right of any member state to self-defense.
In what way is Iraq a threat to the United States that would allow it to act in self-defense of American interests?
The issue that's before the world, it seems to me, is the pervasiveness of weapons of mass destruction and the spread of these, the proliferation of these technologies, chemical and biological weapons, increasingly nuclear weapons. We could, in 10 years, have doubled the number of nuclear powers in the world. The situation with Iraq is that we're at the end of the string. We've tried diplomacy for 12 years. We've tried economic sanctions, and they have not worked. The effort on the part of the international community to prevent him from having those things that enable him to develop those capabilities failed. And he was not contained, and he was not in a box. And even limited military action in the north and the south has really not done it. The critical issue is the relationship between weapons of terrorist states, which Iraq is by everyone's agreement.
America took it off the list of terrorist states 20 years ago.
I don't know that.
When you visited Iraq and negotiated with Saddam Hussein, when America wanted Saddam Hussein for its own purposes, America took Iraq off the list of terrorist states and indeed supplied it with the wherewithal to make the chemical weapons they're now trying to remove.
Well, I've read that type of thing, but I don't know where you get your information, and I don't believe it's correct. They may have been taken off. I was a private businessman and was asked for a few months to assist after the 241 Marines were killed in Beirut, Lebanon. And I did meet with Saddam Hussein. I did not give him or sell him or bring him any chemical weapons or any biological weapons, as some of the European press likes to print. It's just factually not true. Now, whether or not the United States at some point, when I was not part of the government, decided to take him off a terrorist list, you may be right. In fact,
are you saying you don't know, you didn't know when you went there whether he was on the list of terrorist states or not? You were trying to reopen relationship between the United States and Iraq.
That's right, and I believe he was on the list of terrorist states when I went there.
We're being diverted a bit here, but let's just go into this, because it's another of the causes of a lack of credibility, or a credibility gap that you particularly have to fill. That you were there, met the man.
I was asked by the president and Secretary Shultz to meet with him and to see. That was one of the few Middle Eastern countries that had not reestablished relationships with the United States after the earlier Middle East war.
But you're not saying that you weren't aware that he was using chemical weapons, because the Secretary of State at the time had said they were using them.
I was certainly aware of that. I didn't say I wasn't aware of that. I said that I was not aware that the United States gave him, as you suggested, or I gave him, and that I had some burden to bear. That's just utter nonsense.
I wasn't suggesting you had a burden to bear. I was saying that there was one of the reasons you lacked...
You said you particularly had
you went and talked to the man.
I did.
But what I'm suggesting is that the United States, in the world outside, over and over again people say, well, now they're trying to get rid of the weapons, as Jesse Jackson put it when he was at Hyde Park Corner a week ago, for which the United States has the receipts. I mean, that's the problem, that you created this monster of evil, as you know. You, the United States, not you personally.
Well, first of all, you're wrong. If you look at the record of the European countries and the other technologically advanced countries of the world and the relationships with Iraq, I think you'll find that the United States ranks relatively low in terms of trading with Iraq and assisting Iraq with respect to weapons. I think that's correct. I don't have the data, but I think you'll find that's the case. And I think, furthermore, that if it's at some point a ground truth is achieved, it'll be embarrassing to countries that have been providing Saddam Hussein's regime with a great deal of those technologies.
Can we come back to the UN and the second resolution? Is one of the reasons for that, or indeed perhaps the sole reason for that, to keep Tony Blair on side, British Prime Minister, in the difficulties that he has politically at home?
Well, again, you're out of my lane in terms of the subject matter, but I don't doubt for a minute but that the fine job and leadership that Prime Minister Blair has been providing on this subject in the world is something that's very much on President Bush's mind. And when you're working with other countries, as he is, he obviously wants to work in a way that's helpful to the leaders of other countries who are trying to to work together on it. I keep reading that the United States is unilateralist and that we're quote, going it alone. There will be more countries, with or without a second UN resolution, involved in a coalition of the willing, if force has to be used, than there were in the 1991 Gulf War, in my judgment.
Assuming war does come, will it be short, as the British Defense Secretary suggested at the weekend?
I don't know. I think it's... There's so many unknowns in war and so many dangers and so many things that can go wrong. One would hope so. And certainly there's no question but that Saddam Hussein is a repressive regime. And one has to believe that people would rather not be repressed. And that therefore there will be people who, as was the case in 1991, who surrendered and who came over to the other side and who were relieved and felt liberated rather than having some reason to want to fight for the Saddam Hussein regime. I think that's the hope.
Is Saddam Hussein's death or capture a war aim?
A war aim. My aim would be that there would not be a war. In fact, there would be some way that it could be avoided. And that's still my hope. Now, how might that happen? One would be that he would decide to cooperate, which he hasn't thus far. A second would be that he would decide to leave the country. A third would be that there could be a coup against him. Now, any one of those would be preferable if the alternative to him was somebody who wanted to cooperate and see that the country was disarmed, who didn't want to have weapons of mass destruction, who didn't want to threaten its neighbors, who didn't want to use chemicals on his own people or his neighbors, didn't want to fire ballistic missiles into four of his neighboring countries, and who did want to liberate the people of Iraq and allow some sort of representation and the end of repression.
Is there a danger, do you think, that Saddam Hussein will use these very weapons of mass destruction that you think he still has in the event of war?
Certainly there's a danger. He could use them on coalition forces. He could use them on neighboring countries. He could use them on his own people and try to blame it on the coalition.
How damaging to the war plans is Turkey's refusal to let their bases be used?
There are workarounds. We'll be fine. Turkey's a democracy. It's a moderate Muslim country. It's a friend. It's an ally in NATO. And they're going through a democratic process. And we accept that. My guess is that when all's said and done, we'll have some degree of cooperation from them. And as we do from many of the states in that region.
Can I come to the question, which seems to me to be at the heart of all this, of the credibility of the United States position, which clearly exercises the British Prime Minister, the American President, and the administration, and one hears a lot of doubt cast on America's motives for this. Do you think you'd win more backing in the outside world if you'd spent a fraction of the time on the Israeli-Palestinian problem as you've spent on Iraq?
Well, probably. I think that the President and Secretary Powell have have worked on the Palestinian Arab-Israeli problem a good deal in the past 2 years. Presidents made several speeches on the subject. Secretary Powell has been involved. There have been special envoys involved. That is a problem that's a tough one, and it's been a tough one my entire adult lifetime. And that it has not been solved in the last 20 months ought not to be a surprise to anybody. The president cares about it. He is concerned about it. He has addressed it. And I think that had there been success there, there would have been probably greater support. On the other hand, the implication of your question is that there is not great support. And there is great support. There are a very large number of nations that will be participating in a coalition of the willing in the event Saddam Hussein refuses to cooperate and force has to be used.
And yet America is seen as applying double standards in this, isn't it? I mean, using the UN against Iraq, for instance. And then you yourself saying, repeating two or three times in the context of Israel and the UN resolutions there, that the occupied territories on the West Bank are so-called occupied territories. That's the kind of thing that makes people think, well, actually, America's not serious about this. They're so pro-Israel.
Interesting.
They're not. Well, you said that.
Well, first of all, I did not repeat it two or three times. You're just factually wrong.
You said it twice in the same series of remarks. You used the expression so-called.
Fair enough. I was in a meeting, and I was asked a question, and the phrase came out.
But is what you think, that they're so-called occupied, or do you think they're occupied and should be given up?
I think that's what a negotiation is going to solve. I mean, that is what the negotiation is about. Obviously, Israel is offered to give back a major portion of the occupied territories. We know that. The agreement was there. It could have been solved if Arafat had accepted it. He didn't.
But your use of the word so-called...
If it bothered you, then don't use it.
Not me it bothers. It's the other Arab states it bothers.
Well, don't you agree that a purpose of a negotiation is to decide those things? It seems to me that's a fairly reasonable.
Okay.
The Israel has offered to give up a major percentage of the occupied territory.
I want to ask you about America's position in all this. The president has talked about the axis of evil. If there is a war against Iraq, if it's prosecuted successfully, do you as defense secretary then have plans for further military action, for instance, against Iran, perhaps?
No, my hope is that Iran will... First of all, the Pentagon has to have plans that the president asks it to have. But that is not what's happening. My hope there is that in the case of Iran, that the people of Iran, I don't think they're terribly enamored of the small group of clerics that are running that country. And there's stirrings in the women and the young people. And I would suspect that at some point... Those stirrings will end up changing that system in some way.
Regime change will happen there. But I want to ask you this: are you saying you have?
Don't put those words in my mouth.
Oh, all right. Are you suggesting regime change?
No, I'm suggesting exactly what I said: that the women and young people in that country that are uncomfortable with the rule of a small handful of clerics are stirring, and that at some point, my guess is, they will accomplish some sort of a change in how that system works.
Do you have any plans for any further military activity apart from in Iraq, in the Middle East?
First of all, we don't discuss military plans. And second, plans are plans. Our obligation in any Ministry of Defense in the world is to look at potential threats and capabilities that can threaten your country and develop appropriate contingencies. That's what we do. That's our job. You're asking a question that should be asked the president. Does he have anything specific that he intends to do in the event force has to be used in Iraq? And that's a question for the president to answer. But I can say this. He does intend to very definitely continue to pursue the global war on terrorism, which, in fact, he has been doing. We've got 90 nations in a coalition. It's probably the largest coalition in the history of mankind that are participating in a variety of different ways to try to track down terrorist networks and stop them from killing innocent men, women, and children. And that's a good thing to be doing. And there are a number of places in the Middle East where those terrorists are finding haven.
But
Iran is one of the countries.
You
and
say,
Iraq is one of the countries.
So Iran should be in your sights on those grounds.
I wouldn't use words like the hot button words like that, in your sights. I think that that's not the case. I like the way I answered your question just fine.
You say that's a good thing. Aren't people, though, right to be suspicious, who aren't Americans, of one country, in effect, shaping the world to suit itself, to suit its own values?
Yeah. Well, first of all, now you're back to one country, as though the United States is acting unilaterally. In the global war on terrorism, there are 90 nations. Never in the history of mankind have there been that many countries working together on exactly the same project.
I'm only thinking of what the President said. The course of this nation does not depend on the decisions of others. I.e., even if it is true you have a number now, America will nevertheless go it alone if necessary. He said it.
Yeah. If any leader of any country were to say anything other than that they recognize their responsibility as the leader of those countries to defend those countries, they probably wouldn't be in office. There's no question but that the obligation of the president under our Constitution is to defend our country.
Some of the history of the world and civilization was written by others. The rest will be written by us. I mean, there is a sort of American empire seeming to burgeon here in the language that's being used.
Interesting. I don't find it that way. Let me give you an example of why I don't find it that way. If you think of how powerful and lethal biological weapons are, nuclear weapons are, they can kill hundreds of thousands or millions of people. I mean, smallpox, put in three locations in a country, can kill a million people in a matter of months. Now, that's a serious problem for the world. There's nothing the United States can do about that alone. We have to work with other countries. It takes the cooperation of other countries. Other publics have got to engage this issue. Other governments have to engage this issue. Look at the problem with North Korea. The United States can't solve that alone. It takes the cooperation of a lot of countries if we're going to stop the proliferation of those weapons.
One last question. America is obviously having some difficulty in Europe getting support, and it was
some difficulty. Wait a minute now.
Hold on.
The overwhelming majority of the countries in Europe are supportive.
All right. One of your key allies, the Spanish Prime Minister, Aznar, says, we need a lot of Powell.
I saw that.
And very little Rumsfeld.
Yeah.
Are you saying things the rest of the administration won't speak out about? Are you part of the problem of the United States getting the kind of backing it needs?
Well, I doubt it. Certainly the president doesn't think so. My words are very similar to what he says and what Colin Powell says.
Mr. Rumsfeld, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was the American Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld talking to the BBC's David Dimbleby. The interview replaced our regular business and sports programs.